Welcome to the Root of It All podcast with Tree, your human behavior expert. Did you ever wonder why you have the behaviors that you have or how to change them? Did you ever wonder about different people in different industries and what made them good at what they do? Well, this is the podcast for you. You're learning all about human behavior from the experts. So cozy up, go for a walk, or go for that drive that you've always wanted to, and get ready to learn. Learn about you, learn about others, because us as humans, we are the funniest creatures on this planet. So let's learn together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Root of It All podcast with Tree. And today we have a very special guest. This is Scott McFall, and you guys have heard us as he's waving. People that are just listening, he's waving. You've heard us talk about him before because he is our mentor, the mentor. He's also the founder of the Master Hypnotist Society, and some people call him the best human behavior expert in the world. So thank you so much for taking the time, Scott. This is an honor, truly.
Thanks, Tree. It's awesome to be with you. Awesome to be with you.
So what we want to talk about today is the beautiful, and I want to call it magic, because some of it is magic, but it's also like, I mean, us as humans, it's a magic that we're even here. But the magic in like the Master Hypnotist Society and all of the things that people learn and the way that they learn it, and how it actually touches people in a way to allow them to change. And obviously all hypnosis is self-hypnosis, but there's like a minutia to it, and it's so different to any other kind of modality that's out there. So my question for you is, did you seek out to actually have it this way? Or was it something like, as you're learning along the way and you're like, you figured out, yeah, this works, and then you created the program to duplicate it so that it more people have the opportunity to experience it?
Well, it's a great question. I think the reason that MHS clinics, the hypnosis centers, do as well as they do is because of the way that we train the actual trainers. And the way that we do that developed over decades of experiences that we can talk about. A lot of people know that I went to AIH when it was still in business in California. That was the only state licensed graduate program in this sort of stuff. And that program no longer exists, but there are parts of what we do that come from my parents and my grandparents, the things that they did with Harry Arons and as alternative physicians in the 40s and 50s and so on. And then there are parts of this that come from my own journey being a preemie and a childhood heart surgery patient and so on, that have to do with how I learned hypnosis as a client, as a patient, as a kid. There are parts of this that come from certain retreats that I was involved with as a young person, where they were advanced, multi-layered curriculums with multiple layers of facilitators doing amazing things over four-day periods. And so there are tactics in the way that we train that are somewhat different. And we have a different theory about how people grow and change. And that theory has been, and it's not brand new, but we embrace this idea of maturity and change, which is a book that's on the MHS website that Dan did. We also embrace that the context, the bigger picture, as Dan likes to say, is the place that change happens, which is a concept that was in NLP in the first place, that a knowledge of content isn't required to help someone change, but rather that seeing the broad picture of how they're thinking is where the point happens to be, right? And we also work very diligently to get people better at empathy and reading people in order to decide the strategy they're using versus the strategy they might need. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's talked about in Heather's A Dedicated Life. She talks about her journey with being sort of thrust into survival empathy, which I think you're aware of. So there's so much to the way that the MHS system works, whether it's The New People Making by Virginia Satir and deeply digging into the personality of Virginia as an empathy-oriented person, or the postures that she takes, or it's the first half of Unlock Your Mind and Be Free, where he where Edgar Barnett talks about what people think they're guilty of growing up. Mm-hmm. But there's so many little pieces, like this lady, Irene Hickman, the idea of being very non-directive when you're taking people through what we call the Dickens pattern in NLP, what she called non-directive regression. Mm-hmm. So there are all of these pieces, parts that are in the curriculums of every weight loss program, stop smoking program, stress management program, the idea of how people are persuaded away from pain and toward pleasure, like this process and How to Write a Good Advertisement by Victor Schwab, mm-hmm. or the way that history is covered or clinical concepts are covered in order to do the things we need to do for the physician referral work that the consulting hypnotists happen to do, a la William Kroger's work mm-hmm. with regard to history. And the foundational business stuff that we teach that begins the foundation of NLP, like Influencing It with Integrity by Jeannie Labordi here. So we start to realize that we have this eclectic mix of observations that have been tested. And there are many, many, there are 33, you know, of those books. Mm-hmm. Then there's a 600-page manual that's our trainer sharing insight on all of these concepts. There's the toolbox that has to do with practice and style. But all of these skills are taught as one thing. Mm-hmm. Like how you deal with someone in a session is taught, while still teaching how you operate a business, which is taught in terms of the communication styles of Virginia Satir Erickson and Fritz Perls. Mm-hmm. So what we start to see is that these are time-tested concepts that were done in the hypnosis clinics that I ran in the 1980s through the 20 whatevers. Mm-hmm. And then having the hundreds and hundreds of students that we've had, which then sprouted the original trainer team. And back then it was called IHTC. Mm-hmm. And Tree, the way that those trainers were taught is they were brought into a group where their strategies and internal motives were put on top of the table so that they were able to read each other a certain way, which then would help them to read the clients a certain way.
And what I want to add to that is that seeing you work and seeing the strategic way of in which you've created the program, seeing it and being in the experience of the courses, which is very much differentiates how it is that we do things as opposed to other programs, where a common thing that I see is that people, they'll come to hypnosis training or whatever, and they'll say, oh, I just got a whole bunch of scripts. Am I going to just get scripts? Where all of those books, so if you're just listening to this, which each of the books that Scott was mentioning, he was actually holding them up. So I encourage you to go over to YouTube and watch so that you can actually see it. And we can even add the links and stuff. But it's so important that people are understanding that we're really connecting with the people, and we're pulling from all of those people that you mentioned to create a unique experience for what that person needs. And it's so important that the trainers are so well trained under these, and reading the books, covering all the material, going through the 600 and some odd page book that the trainers wrote, that it's all integrated. And that's the most beautiful thing, because it's like, it's not first you do this, then you do this, then you do this, then you do this. No human is like that. And right. And so what would you like, what type of people do you think are the best people to go into this field of work?
Well, isn't that a great question? Yes. Here's the issue. Think of training as a hypnotist like training as an actor. Mm-hmm. Think of it like you're training with like some famous people, like whether it was Uta Hagen or Lee Strasberg. And what you're really training to be is able to read someone and become able to be them long enough to read them, and then have enough expertise to act out the states of mind and skills that they will need next, you know, in a row. And so what you're really studying to a degree is a kind of a performance art that is empathy oriented, where you know what's going on with them and what their outcome happens to be first. And there's sort of an overt and covert version of this outcome. And so think of it like you're a teacher and you're using hypnosis or neurolinguistics as teaching. And one of the big differences with our team, whether it's NLP or hypnosis or whatnot, is we're sort of expecting the student to method act the person that they're currently studying. If it's their trainer, if it's one of the authors, that we're really expecting them to be able to empathize with that person and method act those skills. Now, they've always talked about this clinically, haven't they, in modeling. They say model someone or emulation learning.
That's right.
From 714. But what I've discovered over the years is most academics are studying in what I would call a dissociated state of mind, a computing state of mind. They want to know the information, and they think of the information as an end in itself.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Yeah, I call that kind of like the hungry, hungry hippo, is that they're just wanting information and that's it. Yeah.
Think of like a magician buying tricks at a magic shop and putting them in the closet. They don't really know any of the tricks, but they've got a lot of boxes in their closet.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about here is the ability to build a skill. And these skills would be like similar to playing a sport. But these skills are communication skills, or they're, you know, like right now I'm wearing a handlebar mustache and doing magic stuff in a certain, or mentalism in a certain style, and, you know, helping people in shows where I'm doing shows playing this role, right? But when I was running the clinics, of course, I looked like a corporate person. You know, I usually was clean shaven and very easy to relate to. Right. So notice that we have to realize that whatever we're being has to work for that person who's coming in to get help. Like, we have to be whatever they need in some way.
That's right. Yeah.
So there's a maturity needed when the hypnotist is doing that in their center. And there's an even more profound maturity needed to be training, to be teaching. And that maturity is usually taught in a book in our group called My Voice Will Go With You, The Teaching Tales of Milton Erickson, where he's talking about his very young daughter having a fit and him holding her accountable for a period of 4 hours until she wants to do it right. And so most people don't have Dr. Milton Erickson as a dad. Most, you know, no matter how great their dad or their mom is, most people don't have a parent that understands this particular learning in the same way as the story in My Voice Will Go With You, which I encourage everyone to deeply understand.
Yep.
And to further understand that this maturity, every time you level up in life, you go through the same maturity dramas. And you're going to go through denial and anger, then bargaining, just like you're grieving, except you're going through, you're trying to test where you're acting out will win. That a nervous system just does that. It's part of survival. It's how we work. But there, when we really need to change, when we really need to alter what we're doing, it's an act of acceptance and surrender that becomes the foundation to learn something new. And the issue is that when you're meeting a client, the context that you're teaching is the context of maturity and change and discovery and growth and learning and, you know, all of that sort of thing. And the situation you're doing the hypnosis or neurolinguistics around is this little bubble in their life. But this little bubble is one bubble in a long line of bubbles. And these bubbles tend to be a routine. And so this understanding that when you're studying like this fellow, the Wizard Within guy, this is Al Krasner, and Al came and trained with me quite a bit. And there are a couple of lines from this book that we use a lot. And Al was a very charming, really kind of big picture guy who was working in themes of self-acceptance or themes of certain kinds of moods. And his way of charm accomplished a lot of what we're talking about.
So when you say charm, you're talking about creating rapport, like he can sort of amalgamate himself into whomever he's connecting with.
Maybe a little flirty, maybe a little fun, you know, maybe a little, you know.
I don't know that at all. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, we're pretty good at it, as you know, but it's kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of a thing, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember when he came to train with me, his line was, you know, Scott, I'm going to steal everything you do in here and just teach it right away as if I made it up. And that has to be okay, or I can't come in. And I'm like, Al, I learned a lot from you. You go right ahead, you know. But he was so great because he just came and said that straight to my face, you know. And he was a great, you know, and he's with my father when he met my dad, my late father. Al's girlfriend mentioned my father was attractive, and Al walked up to him and says, it's going to be pistols or swords, pistols or swords. What's the duel going to be? And so it's a whole fun, you know, he was fun. He could be very serious too, but he was very good at this going into a state of mind for someone else's benefit and going into it a little over the top and having a certain amount of leverage because he's over the top, you know? And so when you ask who's the best person to do this, I don't know if any of us show up being the best person to do this. I think it's sort of you get trained to be better at rapport, which requires that you become like them for a period of time without judging.
Yep.
And then you get good at reading a framework and understanding what the motives of this person are that happens to be across from you. And then you can determine whether or not you want to use rapport or you want to use drawing a line in the sand where they need to surrender into acceptance and then use the hypnosis or the NLP. But I think the point is that in order to understand what's going on, first you have to get out of yourself and not worry what kind of person you are for a while. You gotta just play the sport you're in with this other person.
Yeah.
So when you're basketball, you're doing basketball. When you're doing football, you're doing football. When you're doing soccer, you're doing soccer, right?
Well,
and so if your anchors are triggering and you're being you and your biases, you're already kind of done.
Well, and I think nowadays so many people, they can't shed themselves. It's a little bit hard because with social media and stuff, it's almost like they have two layers of themselves. They have themselves in like their real life, they're interacting, and then they've got to think about this social media and then what are they putting there? So it's like these two parallels of what do I want people to see and then what's actually happening. And I believe that that is like, it's going to cause great havoc later on in life because
it already is. Yeah, it already is.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, one of the things that you have to be good at as a hypnotist or a neurolinguist is realizing that positive thinking isn't enough.
That's right.
That you're teaching a kind of a strategy to somebody. And sometimes you're teaching them a strategy of seeing what's really going on in the world, right? And sometimes you're teaching them a decision strategy that takes actions a certain way. The one that's harder, the one that everyone thinks they're good at in the first place, is perceiving what's going on. And so if you're showing them something that they were not able to see before, that's where you get the most, you know, the most resistance. And so online, everybody can join only the groups that agree with them in the first place.
Mm.
And discourse is our side's right, their side's wrong. And nothing has done more to create a stronger bias in human beings than the internet. It's been a disaster. And, you know, I've been in this business now for quite a long time, and I can tell you it was much easier to help people to grow in 1987 than it is today. And it isn't because things are smarter now, quite the contrary. It's because we have more and more tools to take no responsibility ourselves.
Mm. Yeah.
Think about the skills I would need to be great, like I do these meetings and we record them with the Plaud device, P-L-A-U-D device, where it's a Chat GDP based meeting summary software, right? Does a mind map, does the summary, does the transcript, and does the audio, and you can send it out. Well, that's pretty organized, pretty shockingly organized. It even does suggestions for what might be missing, you know? Well, what kind of awesome, like on paper skills would I need to do that without Plaud? Let me put it this way. That was not being done before Plaud. You know, like I was not sitting there typing out every single thing from a meeting and sending summaries to every client.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, those Plaud notes are amazing after a session. They're amazing. Right. On the other hand, they leave decisions pending when people can check the notes later. And there's the problem. People don't make decisions anymore. They are in a process of thinking about it.
Yes. Which holds people in stagnancy, like whether you're a business right. owner or in a relationship, like people mm-hmm. sabotage relationships because of it, because they're staying in this new pattern of just information analysis instead of actually mm-hmm. experiencing. And that's what I love about Master Hypnotist Society, the training and even all of the experiences that the clients get to have, is because it's experience-based. It's not like you are this or you are that. It's about curiosity and flexibility and all of the great stuff with us as humans mm-hmm. foundationally. That's how we're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, you're up in the, you know, Toronto, Burlington area.
Yep.
And I've trained quite a number of people out there, had clients there even before your trainer, Robbie Spear-Miller, who's done a great job up there. And of course, Robbie is one of those people, like many of the other people who've opened schools around the U.S., Canada, elsewhere. And these schools get very large for periods of time. You know, they many of them have been very large over the years. My own were of course, very packed. And now I most of the time consult, you know, for the other trainers and so on. And they get big for a long time and they do well. But the thing that happens eventually is we need to have the generations that are coming up be able to replace the ones that used to be doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a friend who's been a magician for 60 years and he just posted that he's deciding he's going to retire now. and he woke up one day and it's like, okay, now I need to do something else. Right. Now, sometimes in people, that's a maturity drama where what's happening is they're not surrendering into what they need to do. They have a big life change. Something happens. They lose a scapegoat in their life in one way or another, and they stress out. Mm-hmm. But the point is that the schools and the clinics they're a business only to a point. Mm-hmm. They are a vocation in another way, where it requires the dedication of the people involved and the mission of the people involved, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you know, there was a time my clinics, and you have a clinic, so think about this. My clinics usually had about 130 people a week to 150 people a week.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's great that those many people were getting helped, but yeah.
So I'm between, you know, all of those centers, and at one point there were seven of them, you know, and I'm between all those centers and dealing with the clients myself, or training hypnotists to be there, or running the classes and the school part of it on top of that. And so the point is, there's only so many hours in a day.
That's right.
And so at some point, what made the educational process get better and better is if I'm running a center and people are being brought in by the testimonials of my results, and I'm putting other hypnotists or other trainers or other neurolinguists in, they do need to think the way I was thinking getting those outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And that's right. It has to be succinct. Like it's seamless when you follow it in that way that you just mentioned, because it's seamless for the person.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
That is very difficult to achieve, because there's something called reverse transference, where the individual hypnotists and the individual teachers, they want to bring themselves to the table. And what's so difficult to get them to understand is,
there is no,
I'm not bringing myself to the table.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's not what I'm doing. That's difficult for people to process, is that we are doing a kind of performance art that helps people to grow or change. They are with us usually for a period of time during a program. Sometimes they do other programs. Sometimes after it helps them, they decide to become hypnotists or become trainers over time. And trainers are only allowed to be invited to training after they've been in a center as a hypnotist, neurolinguist for a period of time, after they have a certain kind of real experience that is sort of documented. So Dr. Burrow, who's the U.S. president of Master Hypnotist Society, you know, Dan is a licensed psychologist who transitioned from psychology to this. And, you know, he consults in both areas. And the thing is that his large consulting contracts, working for various types of consulting hypnotists or psychology processes or whatever, these contracts are very interesting because they allow him to take the kinds of things that we do and impact traditional lines of change work with the unique brand of assistance that we happen to provide. You know, so it's neat to watch. And I think that like an upcoming hypnotist or an upcoming student, if they were helped in one of the centers by this process, they're a much better student to become a hypnotist or a neurolinguist because they already know it helped them.
Yeah.
And without that knowledge, it's like hypothetical. It's like, who cares, you know, whatever. But if you changed, if you lost 100 pounds doing it, if you got out of pain doing it, if you quit smoking doing it, if it fixed your communication and calmed you down dealing with someone, if you had your phobia go away, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It was a miracle for your life. You're just going to understand what's going on so much better than if you didn't come from that.
Yeah. And what I'll add to that too is that it gives them the insight of how to interact with the client better as well in terms of the overall experience. And then vaccinating against potential projection of putting people through programs that how their experience was, to let that go and to allow the people that they're working with have their own experience. So it's kind of like letting go of projecting, and then also stepping into it. It's great because they know the little nuances about how each session sort of works a little bit better. Because I've had that experience. Like, I've had multiple people working at the clinic that I have, and the ones that didn't go through the program, they missed the little nuances. And it didn't dawn on me to actually teach that. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, that's something that they need to have a different experience about. So, and the great—
If you don't watch them work, you're guessing at what they took with them from the training. And once you watch them work, I mean, I'll fly into clinics and watch people, and it's like this, it's just, oh no, oh. Because once you watch them working on clients, you see what they're seeing and what they're not seeing.
Yeah.
And that can be a very complex moment, mm-hmm. you know? It's very important to realize that the really great hypnotist, neurolinguist person is a person who perceives accurately, amazingly in the first place. Not projecting, not needing to be right, yeah. not needing the admiration from the client, none of that, just seeing what's going on.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I want to add to, Scott, that I think it's important for people to know about Master Hypnotist Society and the culture in which we provide everybody, whether it's a client or a trainer, that it's there's no such thing as failure. There's only feedback. So it's really about the consistency of moving forward and that we are all on the same page, that there's no ego, there's no nothing, and that is the culture that we want to persevere and to seep out to all the clinics across North America. And that deeply, like when I talk about the mission and even the people that I'm coaching or training or whatever, that it is the mission that when people are coming in, they're changing themselves. So even every trainer, we are changing ourselves as we're going through. And there's a very high importance for that, because if we think that, oh, I've learned enough and I'm good at this, and where no, there's always more. There's absolutely always more. And that's my favorite thing about it. Is being curious about what that more is and where to go next, which is really cool.
Right. Yeah, I think that's great. And that's great. Ego always grows back, no matter how enlightened we think we are, and it's funny how one person referred to it, and I've adopted this over the years. It's like shaving. You have to shave again. You have to shave again. And you learn over the years that there are weird things that happen where you don't know how. There's a word in neurolinguistics, they call it ecology, the ecology of someone's life. So how are they with their sisters and brothers as adults? In what way have they scapegoated their parents as the cause of something? In what way do they think about their friends? How do they compare themselves to others? What way do they deal with money? How do they deal with fitness? There's all of this, these pieces, parts, and pieces and parts. And when you move one, the sister or brother passes away, or something changes, or someone moves. The parents pass away or are different. There's something that happens where the kids move out of the house and something's different. But see, the point is that this ecology, if something changes in the ecology, the person won't know consciously how come they're wildly stressed all of a sudden. They won't really understand. And so, because the cause and effect relationships that they've been taking for granted, maybe since they were 12, maybe since they were 15, all of a sudden they're different. But we have the arrogance as human beings that we are conscious of all the reasons things are happening. And content-driven conversations in therapeutics, the idea is that the person could discuss it back and forth and arrive at the accuracy. Well, that doesn't seem to prove true very much, almost never. So the thing that happens is that we realize that there has to be some kind of neurological change or safety, right?
And when you talk about neurological change, that's where NLP comes in, right? And
Yeah.
all say or
It's
like through imagination, go ahead, elaborate.
in the early days, it really had to do with a lot of things. I mean, it had to do with massage therapy, body work, the hypnosis and the body work being combined. But the thing is that we don't do a lot of body work in the way the clinics work anymore, but we do the physical movement, like physically making them move through the Virginia Satir pattern. And that, sure, we're talking about the blamer and the placator, but what we're really doing is having them move. They're moving and pointing. They're moving, and we're making the body change position over and over again, knowing that we have to change their physiology first, and then their mood, and then their thought process. So we're loving the moving different neurologically and doing different things that are causing the eyes to move differently. A lot of people are really enamored with EMDR or tapping nowadays, but those physiology changes were always part of this curriculum, in the way the screenings are done, in the way the sessions are done. So the movement of the routines and the hypnosis and the NLP and stuff, it's all blended together. In the same way that the group classes that are done for clients and the individual sessions have always been required, whether they're done on Zoom like this or whether they're done in a classroom. But you see that there's movement different and there's eye movement difference. All of this stuff is sort of intrinsic in the way that the programs are set up for these clients. And that's why all these techniques are blended together in the first place.
Well, and what's great about the programs too, because they're set up in a strategic way. And then I want to talk a little bit about like the extra stuff kind of things. Like we have the Thursday at 1 p.m. calls that also support all of our clients and trainers and stuff like that. And then even with each of the clinics, there's different things that are put in place. Like there's mentorship calls, there's like different pods and different things. So I love the constant support system that is also integrated into the programs. Like it's
Well, let's look at that a second. Even that starts with situational awareness and watching and being really good at watching and hearing what's going on. So when I was still acting as like acting president or whatnot, I was literally talking to these people all the time individually once a week or gathering information. This is working. This is failing. These are the problem clients. Here's the advertising that's not working for people. Here's the advertising that's filling clinics. Here's a way that really unfortunate numbers of people that need to be referred out are being produced in the wrong way. Here's a way that hypnotists are melting down or not seeing things right. Here's the way that they are seeing things right. So, in other words, there's information gathering. And then the topics or the focus or the games that have to happen in those meetings are directly corollary with the with situational awareness in the entire organization. So it's the curriculum cross-referenced with outcomes equals the conversation. And so the issue is, can we keep alive the way that that intel is gathered? Because it requires the person that's going to be facilitating those meetings to have the, I don't know, being whatever way a person is off a bubble to need to get all that information, because it's a lot of work to get all that information, and you got to love it. You know, I happen to love it doing that. But when you're managing an organization, you got to have what is known, like you got to have intel. How's it going? Great. How's it going? Terrible. And what we know about the old culture of little islands of people being hypnotists and neurolinguists is it had some big drawbacks because there's no outside accountability to the mind of that hypnotist. So we have this on the table culture that is designed to be very different than how it used to go. And so I'm personally not fond of conferences that are free for alls about all the topics that are talked about with no agenda, and people just show up and talk about various stuff, and then everybody goes home because there's no accountability to know something or have mastered something at the end of that conference. Everyone is just thinking whatever they felt like when they got there. And technically, there is no actual learning at those conferences in the way that there could be, if that makes sense. And so what we had set up over the years is a process of skills accountability, skills checking that requires a different kind of compliance. And it is based on the tolerance of scrutiny. So that's another huge difference in our culture is we're helping people get comfortable with scrutiny as a hypnotist, as a performer, as a speaker, as a teacher. We're getting comfortable with the idea of the outside feedback where the strategy for taking in the scrutiny is safer. And that alone, that cultural difference is a significant difference in how things are done.
Yes, very, very much so. And it's interesting what happens in the nervous system when you get more comfortable with the scrutiny. It's almost like a relief, per se, because it's like you're not carrying as much, or what you're trying to prove, basically. Like, because we're all kind of walking around trying to prove something about ourselves, essentially. But once you let that go and you're more in the flow of just trusting what's happening and then all of a sudden you're attracting more of what you're naturally meant to attract for the direction in which you're going, which I find fascinating. Like the more and more that I am immersed in this and surrendering into it, it's like I almost feel like it was meant to be, right? Like I didn't wake up one morning and think like, oh, I'm going to be a hypnotist, right? It was just something that I fell into. And I think a lot of people kind of fell into it in that way, trying to change or need help for themselves. And then all of a sudden they're enrolled in the program and then it just goes on and so forth. So it's a really cool thing.
That's awesome. Well, I think that one thing I'll mention is you just described when someone learns the lesson of handling scrutiny, there is the possibility of acting out more, like feeling the terror that they're going to lose admiration or afraid of criticism in some way, when in fact they should be just really relaxed and have their feet on the floor where they're at. But a person who is ra raised as like somebody's little angel, where they don't know that it's okay to fall out of that feeling for a while to do something even cooler, or somebody who's really afraid of the way that scrutiny was thrown at them a certain way, it can be kind of a tougher skill to learn than one would think if the person needs to be special in a very intense way, or if they're really afraid of criticism, or it can be a little, can be,
Paralyzing.
yeah, it could be a little, yeah. And so the thing is that using hypnosis to change that and having them be calm and relaxed and being able to compare or do the Charles Dickens pattern or timeline type stuff, like timeline from NLP, or the idea of going back as the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future, and reviewing and reframing or reinterpreting things in the best interest of that individual, and then feeling safe taking in the world as it is, or where their current skill set happens to be at. See, the method by which they learn might be more important than what you teach them. The fact that you teach them to learn differently might be much more important than the specific things you are teaching them, because then they can learn anywhere. They can calm down and take in the world a different way. They can feel safe developing themselves without having to be up here, you know?
And it's such a great release for people once they surrender into that or move through. Like I quote you all the time when you say maturity is about moving through frustrated desire alone, right? Like
And that's Fritz Perls. Yeah,
oh,
that's
Fritz.
me quoting Fritz Perls. Yeah, and that's a very important thing to remember, because maturity requires frustration of desire to develop, which means we don't develop any maturity while we're just having things go great or winning. We don't develop maturity, the ability to surrender what into what is so without acting out. We don't get any of that when we're just our when our talents are just having us win all the time.
That's right. Yeah, and so Scott, like I know I can't believe that we've been on here for 40 minutes and I've taken up so much of your time. Is there anything you want to leave people with when like last remarks or like something that can motivate people or people if they're looking to become a hypnotist or what do you want to leave people with?
I would say the reason to go to a hypnotist is to control your state of mind. Your state of mind will help you control the rest of your mind. And 90% of the time, it's the difference between frustration and resentment or gratitude. And so as you come into this process, perhaps it's an adventure of discovering things about ourselves that becomes an adventure of helping people to do the same thing using hypnosis and other tools. And I look forward to hopefully meeting a few of you here and there.
Yeah, and I'm sure you will because you're gonna you come down here quite a bit and we always advertise when you're down and stuff like that. So we'll keep everybody informed the next time that happens. And yeah, we're going to have all of Scott's links and the Master Hypnotist Society links and stuff like that so everybody can check it out. But yeah, thank you so much for all of your insight, guidance, and even just working with you in the Master Hypnotist Society, it's an awesome ride.
Well, thanks a lot. Have a good one, Tree.
Thank you.
Enjoy yourself.
And thanks for listening to another great episode of the Root of It All podcast with Tree. So if you want to check us out on Instagram or Facebook, you can go to Business Growth Results on either of those platforms, or you can even go to businessgrowthresults.com if you have a suggested topic or theme, or you want to get a free hypnosis download. So we'll talk to you soon. Till next time, see you later.